been asked to first read a little bit from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. And we're reading from page 217. The chapter is called The Resident of Vrindavan. And the text reads, Alone and poor, Abhai returned to Vrindavan. He was 62, but he wasn't thinking of retiring. More than ever, his mood was reflective and renounced. Because few people knew him and because he wanted to write, he kept to himself. He enjoyed deep peace as a resident of Vrindavan. His window, the sacred Jamuna flowed by in a peaceful panorama for his private audience. The Keshi Ghat neighborhood was quiet, though in the pre-dawn he could hear a few devotees bathing and chanting. When the moon was full, the river seemed like a coolly resplendent jewel. And in the morning, the sun would appear like a red smudge, a fire burning through an opaque wall, at last bursting forth and clearing the entire sky until the hot blaze of noon, while the room would be in shadows. Abhai could see from his window a shimmering sun high in the sky and glittering across the silver sheet of the gentle river. Very poetic, huh? Who can write like that? Can any of you write like that? Very nice. Without so much as leaving his room, from his doorway he could see hundreds of temples clustered together for miles in the friendly town of Vrindavan. The various punctual kirtans and bell ringings in the temples, the spontaneous songs to Krishna in numerous homes and in the streets rose and filled the air with devotion. Paragraph. On the veranda, Abhai could chant japa and there would be no interruption. He enjoyed a simple, almost carefree life of minimized physical wants, a few hours of rest at night, a little prasadam at noon, the simplest clothing, and he did not have to flatter anyone, support anyone, or manage anyone's life. His mind and intelligence were free and dwelt constantly on his service to his spiritual master. He saw his present circumstances as a preparation for a greater task before him. Despite his advanced age, he felt that he had barely begun his work. Yet, he felt confident. He had his vision of a world association of devotees. It was not an idle dream, although he was not certain how it would come about. But he knew his duty. For the present, he would go on describing his vision. The vision of his predecessor spiritual masters in articles and books. But as soon as possible, he should go to the West. Westerners, he had concluded, were not satisfied with a materially comfortable life devoid of spiritual understanding, with a materially comfortable life, more than his fellow Indians, they would be open to the message of the absolute truth. He knew he should go, and he would go if Krishna desired. Abhai lived frugally in Vrindavan, keeping exact account of every expenditure and every receipt. He carefully kept a ledger, just as if he was running a substantial business, even though his purchases were only a little milk, a few vegetables, charcoal for cooking, bus rides, and his major expenditure, postage. Well, the next is a poem. I'm going to read the poem. Abai composed a Bengali poem, Vrindavan Bhajan. Its opening stanzas were especially self-reflective and personal. It's in four parts. Number one, I am sitting alone in Vrindavan Dham. In this mood, I'm getting many realizations. I have my wife, sons, daughters, grandsons, everything, but I have no money, so they are a fruitless glory. Krishna has shown me the naked form of material nature. By his strength, it has all become tasteless to me today. Yasyaham anugranami Adishye tad dhanam shanai. Quote, I gratefully take away all the wealth of those upon whom I am merciful. Unquote. How was I able to understand this mercy of the all-merciful? Two. Everyone has abandoned me, seeing me penniless. Wife, relatives, friends, brothers, everyone. This is misery, but it gives me a laugh. I sit alone and laugh. In this maya samsara, whom do I really love? Where have my loving father and mother gone now? And where are all my elders who were my own folk? Who will give me news of them? Tell me. Who? All that is left of this family life is a list of names. Three. As the froth on the foam on the seawater mixes again in the sea, Maya Samsara's play is just like that. No one is mother or father or personal relative. Just like the sea foam, they remain but a short time. Just as the froth on seawater mixes again in the sea, the body made of five elements meets with destruction. How many bodies does the embodied soul take in this way? His relatives are all related merely to the temporary body. Four. But everyone is your relative, brother, on the spiritual platform. The relationship is not tinged with the smell of Maya. The Supreme Lord is the soul of everyone. In relationship to him, everyone in the universe is the same. All your relatives, brother, all the billions of jivas, when seen in relation to Krishna, they are all in harmony. Forgetting Krishna, the jivas desire sense gratification, and as a result, he is firmly grasped by Maya. End of the poem. This little section before. Relates completely with somebody sent to me a video clip that was posted on YouTube by Ravi Shankar. Does that name mean anything to you? The sitarist Ravi Shankar, during Prabhupada's time, is now a very prominent quote speaker. spiritual personality in India today, and he his banner is Art of Living. So there's a video clip, just 2 minutes long. I sent you the link, Paramatma, where Ravi Shankar is speaking about when one gets older. Some people think, oh, you know, the tail end of life and misery. But he's saying that in the aged stage of life, there's lots of realization, lots of wisdom, and so much gifts that one can give to the world because of that matured stage of life. And then he starts speaking about Prabhupada. A prime example is Swami Prabhupada. Do you know him? And oh, you don't know him. Here's his story. He starts telling Prabhupada's story. You know, at such an age, he got it wrong. At his age, he got wrong. But the principle was, at over 70 years of age, he said he borrowed some money. He didn't borrow some money. He got a passage on a steamship from Calcutta all the way across to America. And, you know, his heart attacks. And when he reached New York, he didn't have anything. He said the details he got wrong, but the principle was he just took shelter of Krishna. And in those meager beginnings, the whole Hare Krishna movement began at a mature stage of life. So, that is Ravi Shankar's praising Prabhupada in this way, very much like we praise Prabhupada in this way. For a different reason. His motivation is not honoring a pure devotee. His motivation was people in old age, they can still do things that are of value. But the whole Hare Krishna movement, its beginnings were very humble, but all of these pages that you're reading now in your morning classes, it's the incubation stage of that explosion that Prabhupada brought into the world. Srimad Bhagavatam, is it first written somewhere? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So you can't chant responsibly unless you have a very good memory. So I'll recite it.
Maitreya Uvacha.
That was pretty easy, right? Let's try the next one.
Tava Vasya Jagat Shastra.
Wow. Okay.
Kumarai Saha Naradaha. Hamso hamsena yanena Sri Dhamma paramam yayao.
You people are good. Let's do it again.
Maitreya uvacha.
Maitreya uvacha.
Tava vasya jagat shastra. Kumarai Saha Naradaha. Hamso Hamsena Yanina. Sri Dhamma Paramam Yaya.
Fantastic. Now word for word.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya said.
Tao.
The couple.
Avasya.
having reassured. Jagat Shrastha, the creator of the universe. Kumarai, along with the Kumaras. Saha Naradaha, with Narada. Hamsaha, Lord Brahma. Hamsena Yanena, by his swan carrier. Sri Dhamma Paramam, to the highest planetary system. Yaya, when? Translation. Sri Maitreya said, after thus speaking to Kardama Muni and his wife Devahuti, Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, who is also known as Hamsa, went back to the highest of the three planetary systems on his swan carrier with the four Kumaras and Narada. Report by Srila Prabhupada. The words Hamsena Yanena are very significant here. Hamsa Yana, the airplane by which Brahma travels all over outer space, resembles a swan. Brahma is also known as Hamsa because he can grasp the essence of everything. His abode is called Tridhama Paramam. Tridhama is three abodes, and Paramam is topmost. There are three divisions of the universe: upper planetary system, middle planetary system, lower planetary system. But his abode is above even Siddhaloka, the upper planetary system. He returned to his own planet with the four Kumaras and Narada because they were not going to be married. The other rishis who came with him, such as Marichi and Atri, remained there because they were to be married to the daughters of Kardama. But his other sons, Sanatanaka, Sanandana, and Sanatana, and Narada, went back with him to his in his swan-shaped airplane. The four Kumaras and Narada are Naishtika Brahmacharis. Naishtika Brahmachari refers to one who never wastes his semen at any time. They were not to attend the marriage ceremony of their other brothers, Marichi and the other sages, and therefore they went back with their father, Hamsa. So, verse again. Maitre Uvacha, Tava Vasya Jagat Shastha Kumarai Saha Naradaha Hamso Hamsena Yadmina Sri Dhamma Paramam Yau. Maitreya said, after thus speaking to Kardama Muni and his wife Devahuti, Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, who is also known as Hamsa, went back to the highest of the three planetary systems on his swan carrier with the four Kumaras and Narada. Why is, before why, what's the relationship between Kardama Muni and Devahuti, they were husband and wife, and Lord Brahma? Like they're related, they're family relatives. Lord Brahma is the firstborn being in creation. And the first Manu, Swayambhu Manu, comes directly from the body of Lord Brahma. He just saw the necessity of having a Manu to regulate the universe, and there came Hamsa. This is Brahma's capacity. He just thinks a thought, and he's so powerful that thought manifests as an entity, as a being. He didn't need the normal way of procreation. He just thought the thought, and Svayambhuva Manu was manifest, along with his wife, Shatarupa. And Svayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa had 5 children. They had the normal way of having children. And 2 of them were sons and 3 of them were daughters. One of the daughters is Devahuti. So Devahuti, there's a description in the, this is the 3rd canto, earlier in the 3rd canto. Devahuti was requested by her father because a Kshatriya lady in some cases was given the opportunity to select her husband. So she selected Kardava Muni. So Svayambhuva Manu, along with his daughter Devahuti, went deep into the forest to find Kardava Muni. And upon request by Svayambhuva Manu for Kardava Muni to accept his daughter in marriage, Kardava Muni accepted. There was a prior event where Kardava Muni was deep in meditation and Lord Vishnu appeared right in front of him saying, "You pleased me very much. So much so I've come before you. And not only that, I'm going to give you a further benediction, and that is you will marry and one of your sons will be an incarnation of me, Lord Vishnu. So, stand by." This very wonderful experience of having as your son the personality of Godhead. So he knew that was going to happen already, Kardava Muni. And so when this proposal for marriage to Devahuti was made, he made with Svayambhuva Manu one condition. The one condition is, "I'll take care of your daughter as my wife, but when that time comes that there is a son who can look after your daughter, as the son in a mature stage may look after his mother, then I'm going to renounce family life and return to the forest and continue my devotional practices in seclusion." So for the father that was okay, for the Devahuti that was okay, so they were married. And Svayambhuva Manu returned to his palace and continued his activities. So now Devahuti and Kardava Muni are husband and wife, or wife and husband. And over a passage of time, many qualified daughters were first born, and they became mature and of marriageable age. After that period of time, Devahuti became pregnant with Kapiladeva, the incarnation of Lord Vishnu. Knowing this to be the case, Lord Brahma descended. Devahuti's father's father, or grandfather of Devahuti, and for as far as Kardava Muni is concerned, it's his wife's grandfather. So he came. He didn't come alone. He came with others who were, you can say, brothers of Svayambhuva Manu, because Svayambhuva Manu was born directly from the body of Lord Brahma. So were also the great sages. starting with Rishi and so forth, Rishi, Atri, they're mentioned earlier. They came when Brahma came. So they're quite elderly. They're in age comparable to Devahuti's father, Swayambhuva Manu, but they were without qualified wives because this is in the very beginning of creation, and there weren't, like, there weren't wives. There weren't beings around. So it took some time. Swayambhuva Manu, Devahuti, Karamuni, and daughters. So those daughters were to be married to Marici and Atri and various other sages for the purpose of creating praja, good offspring to populate the planet that Brahma had created and the Swayambhuva Manu was looking after as the progenitor of mankind and the lawgiver of mankind. Had to be people to rule over, and then in turn other forms and species of life generated by these amazing prajapatis. So the sages came and they stayed because they were to be married to the daughters of Karna Muni and Devahuti. Those that returned with Lord Brahma, so there was this exchange between the two, Brahma and Karnava Muni. When Brahma returned, he took with him the four Kumaras and Narada because they weren't to get married. And they didn't even stay around for the wedding of their brothers. Doesn't say like they were not supposed to, just they didn't stay. And Brahma in his Vimana, Vimana means an aircraft. So it's a different kind of aircraft than what come in and out of the airport here in Georgetown. They're celestial aircraft. Sometimes, most of the time, the Vimana of Brahma is depicted as a swan. Twice in the purport, Prabhupada specifically says, looking like a swan. It doesn't say what it is, just looking like a swan. And so his Vimana, it looks like a swan, and he's also called Hamsa, a swan, because he's a swan-like person who can take nectar. You know this example Prabhupada gave, that a swan has capacity, it has a particular kind of beak, that the beak can go into water, take milk, and leave the water. So, similarly, a swan-like person can take something valuable even from an impure place. So therefore, the topmost stage of spiritual life is also compared to a swan, or paramahamsa stage, where one is able to extract the essence, that's Krishna and Krishna bhakti, from any circumstance of life, even, you know, bad one, even awful one. They can take the essence, Krishna, and Krishna bhakti. Just like Prabhupada was writing in that little poem that we read, that all living beings, they're actually servitors of Krishna. And a paramahamsa can see that. We don't see that. We see people doing bad things and good things, and we're to make those discriminations, those distinctions. But a paramahamsa doesn't make those distinctions. They see everyone as serving Krishna. He's the controller, and they're moving according to indications of Krishna. Of course, according to their guna and karma. But people don't generally see that. They only see maya. And how can I enjoy? Or, you know, it's not happening. I'm not enjoying. So, the four Kumaras, Brahma. It's described where they returned to was Tridhama Paramam. So upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. And amongst the upper planetary systems, it's the topmost. The hierarchy goes like this, just like in the Gayatri Mantra. Bhu Loka, Buhar Loka, and Swarga Loka. But Swarga Loka, that's heaven, that's not the maximum, because above Swarga is Maharaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Brahmaloka. That's seven. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there is very fascinating description of Maharaloka, Janaloka, and Tapaloka, and Brahmaloka, in detail. Very fascinating, because we don't so much hear about what goes on there, what's it like. So, Gopa Kumar, who's one of the main characters in the second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he goes to those places. And he meets the people who live there. He sees what they're doing. Quick description. Maharaloka, this is above the heavenly realm. It's a region where grihastas go who are completely detached from sense gratification, and they're completely attached to the performance of yajna or sacrifice. So what do they do in Maharaloka? Sacrifice, yajnas. And they're not only attached to the performance of sacrifice, but they're attached to the Supreme Lord who receives the offerings. And he's so attached to their devotion to him that when they're making their yajnas, he appears from the fire and extends his hands like this and receives their offerings in his hands, personally. So they like having long yajnas because they get darshan of the Lord. And when the yajna is over, he receives, and then they get ready to prepare the next yajna because they want that interaction with the Lord. It's just this festival of yajnas and the Lord receiving offerings. And it's a place for grihastas, because above the Maharaloka, in between is Janaloka. It doesn't say too much about Janaloka. It speaks more about Tapaloka. And what happens in Tapaloka? Brahmacharis only. No grihastas. Brahmacharis only. So, headed by the four Kumaras. Actually, the four Kumaras are Vaikunthavasis, but they give their association in that realm because, you know, they're encouraging the Tapasvis in Tapaloka. And their activities are two. Meditation. They're big meditation fans, because in their meditation, the Lord appears personally in their meditation. So they meditate for a long time. Long, 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 long time. In fact, when Gopa Kumar comes there, he thinks everyone's being rude, because they're just like meditating. And you know, hello, and meditating. And for like long periods of time, meditating. And finally they come out of their meditation, they do the second thing. They discuss philosophical topics, like the personified Vedas and the great sages and the four Kumaras. They have like very elevated philosophical discourse. They take a little prasad, they go take a little rest, and they go back to meditation. That's the program, Tapaloka. And then above that is Brahmaloka, or Satyaloka also called, where Lord Brahma resides. And these are the seven upper planetary systems. Mentioned in the purport of this verse is Siddha Loka. Siddha Loka. It's in that upper region. It doesn't say here, and I'm not conversant as to where in that region of the upper seven. But It's in the upper regions, and Brahmaloka is above Sitaloka. And only the most qualified persons can go to Brahmaloka, along with Lord Brahma. But, as we know from Bhagavad Gita, even in Brahmaloka, there's death. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Purnar Avartan Arjuna. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, from the highest planets down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. So when Gopal Kumara goes to Brahmaloka, he's amazed that people are in anxiety that they're going to die. Like, you know, we're having a good time, but it's going to end. Much like Prabhupada was saying in that poem. Only, you know, one who wants to enjoy and is attached to enjoyment, when that facility for enjoyment is taken away by time, which destroys all things, if you don't have shelter of the personality of Godhead, you're in anxiety. And conversely, if you have shelter of the personality of Godhead, whatever is taking place, it's not of ultimate consequence, it's of some consequence. Just like, you know, there's been so much rain. I was looking out the window and seeing the cows. They're like wading around in the water up to their necks, trying to eat grass wherever there's a little bit of something up there. But then later on, it's going to be dry. So, you know, the opposites are there. So what do you do when it's this opposite or that opposite? Very hot, very cold, very wet, very dry. Happiness and distress, honor and dishonor. The indication of Bhagavad Gita is one should tolerate tongues to teach Bharata. One should tolerate that. And what else do you do? If you tolerate that, your attention has to go somewhere. Your attention should go to that which is eternal. Na sate vijate bhavo na bhavo vijate sataha. Ubayor api. Drishton Tvastvanios Tattvadarshibi. Krishna's advice is, in Bhagavad Gita, the Tattvadarshi, the seer of the truth, withdraws consciousness from asat and places consciousness in sat. And if you place consciousness in that which is eternal, you can easily be indifferent to the circumstances of temporary. And that's the situation in the higher realm, but there's still some residual enjoying tendency only in the spiritual realm. The enjoying tendency is reposed entirely in Krishna's enjoyment. That's the state of pure consciousness. So, in the womb of Devahuti is yet to be born Kapila Dev, the residence of the upper planetary systems, showered flowers and songs and praises, and Lord Brahma has personally come and honored. Before he even spoke to Kapila Dev, to Kardama Muni, he worshipped the child within Devahuti's womb. And then he spoke to Kardama Muni, saying, "You're so fortunate. Very soon the Supreme Lord is going to appear from the womb of Devahuti." Okay, so there's text 20 from chapter 24 of Canto 3. Any discussion or questions? Okay, thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada.